Welcome to Health Unabashed, broadcasting live on Healthcare Now Radio. Health Unabashed stands at the crossroads of healthcare and innovation, offering a dynamic conversational platform. We convene leading minds to delve into the essence of health and wellness, exploring everything from visionary concepts to business strategies. Our goal is to present the forefront of health tech advancements, impactful AI applications, policy considerations, and their effects on public health and well-being. I'm Greg Masters, your co-host and executive producer, alongside the esteemed digital health expert, Gil Bash. Gil brings his extensive knowledge as an author, editor, and global thought leader, embodying both leadership and service in his executive role. Together, our mission is to introduce you to the individuals, ideas, and organizations leading by example in healthcare. In this episode, we're honored to host Sachin H. Jain, MD, MBA, a fellow of the American College of Physicians, the CEO of Scan Group and Scan Health Plan. This organization reaches over 300,000 members and boasts revenues of $4.8 billion. Dr. Jain is also a pivotal founding team member at the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation, also known as CMMI. Before joining SCAN, Dr. Jain led CareMore Health and Aspire Health, where he established the world's first clinical program dedicated to combating social isolation. His insights are widely shared through his Forbes columns and have earned him a spot among the 100 most influential people in U.S. healthcare by Modern Healthcare. Gil, take it away.
Greg, thank you so much for that great introduction. And you're absolutely right. We have just an incredible guest with us today, Sachin Jain. Dr. Sachin Jain is really one of the, I think, must-watch people in the United States. And though he's been on Modern Healthcare's list of 100 healthcare executives in the U.S., I think he is bigger than that. We're going to talk a little bit about why. I would probably say to people who are concerned about the state of health, access to care, health equities, health justice, that Dr. Jain Sachin is one of the people you should really watch. I would say, I'll be as bold as to say the top 10 people you should be watching. Sachin, you just have an incredible background. I mean, in a fragmented world, and we talk about fragmented health all the time, you have been obviously Harvard-trained physician, internal medicine, dealing with people on their very basic, often non-communicable disease needs, heart disease, diabetes, respiratory disease, mental illness, the whole gamut of why people face morbidity and mortality. You were on the front lines of doing that for your residency. You became one of the earlier pioneers in terms of how health information could actually improve access to care, efficiency, workflow. You were in the Office of Information Management for at the White House level, and then you jumped in with really one of the great luminaries of health in our time, Don, at Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Beneficiary Services. You were embedded there, and then obviously at the same time you were exploring the early stages of how digital health and health information could be used to engage patients. You did that. Then you did a stint in big pharma with really one of the classic, global players of the world. You were at Merck in a position that allowed you to sort of transverse divisions and issues. You're very much focused on health information and the digitization of our industry, working with a great mutual friend of ours, Dr. Mike Rosenblatt, also from Harvard and New England Deaconess and Tufts. Few people know that he actually was one of the drivers of medications in endocrinology and osteoporosis, passionate physician and drug developer as well. And then, by the way, after Merck, he obviously went over to Flagship Pioneering, little private equity and incubator, did things like, COVID-19 vaccines. And he was one of your mentors as well, and a mutual friend of ours. And after Merck, you did something very bold. You went into the health system. And you sort of went back to your residency in a way, and you joined a health system. You started to kind of rewrite the rules. I think you were CEO of CareMore. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Now you're, of course, leading SCAN, which I think is, I'm hoping we'll talk a little bit about that because I think it's a model for our nation. So I guess we could say, what haven't you done? You're leading this company. You helped another company really get its sea legs and get going in the right direction. You're a close-knit to your childhood friends. You're a devoted child to your mother and fly back to the East Coast to see her often. I guess if we were to make our perfect human being, we have him right.
Oh boy. Today. So oh boy.
You have a big bar to cover today.
Bill, it's a little bit too much. You know, I would like you to speak to my wife and tell her that all of these things, and hopefully she'll give me a pass.
Okay. So, are you home? Do you have a chance to get home with all these responsibilities?
I am home. I am home. And, you know, trying to do the best I can at home as well. So.
You know, I've always wanted to ask you, you're one of the few people, put aside your courageous, adventurous spirit for a second. You have seen the health ecosystem, the fragmented health ecosystem, from many different perspectives. And I wanted to ask you, how did that influence your decision to take on SCAN, to become CEO of SCAN, which is a very different model than most major health systems? I mean, it's really dealing with people who have really pressing health needs, and you've taken this on and really organized that. How did that earliest genesis impact this?
Yeah, so, you know, I think, you know, the Greek philosopher Diogenes was always kind of in search of an honest man. And I think I've always been in search of, you know, solutions of how to make healthcare better, just recognizing how broken it is and trying to think about what is the best vantage point from which to improve healthcare. And I've worked in public, for-profit companies. I've, you know, through some of my advisory and board work, I've worked in, you know, smaller venture and private equity-backed companies. I've worked in government. I've worked in the delivery system. And, you know, I think one of the biggest challenges we have in our country right now is really the for-profitization of care. And this is a theme, actually, that an undergraduate mentor of mine, Professor Deborah Stone, really took on in her academic work, which was, you know, what happens when the caring professions become more motivated by profit than they are by serving patients? And I'm not, you know, I'm not somebody you can tell from my career that has, you know, kind of, you know, religious virtue around for-profit being bad and not-for-profit being good, which, you know, I think a lot of people in our ecosystem have. But I do think that there are some flexibilities that you have when you're not a slave to quarterly earnings, and when you can make decisions that are truly in the interest of people, and you're not facing a competitor motive, which is namely, you know, the interest of shareholders or the interest of investors. And when the SCAN board called me and said, hey, we want you to come and lead this organization. And by the way, we also want to diversify into the delivery of care. It felt like just an opportunity that was too good to be true in some regards, because you know, I think we were really set up for success. We had brand, a reputation. You know, even though some people confuse SCAN with a radiology company, we're actually the Senior Care Action Network. We were founded in 1977 by a group of community activists. We call them the 12 Angry Seniors, and their spirit lives on in our organization, and we are, you know, every day challenging the broken status quo in healthcare. And frankly, it's that kind of innate dissatisfaction with the status quo that just feels like a really, felt like a really great match for me, and continues to feel like a really great match for me, because we do have so many problems that need solving in healthcare. And so, you know, we've been able to take on homeless healthcare, which is such a big issue here in Southern California, where I reside. We've been able to take on, you know, home-based care for frail seniors. We've been able to take on social isolation. We've launched products for the LGBTQ plus population, you know, a generation of seniors who are basically hiding in the shadows of society. You know, we've launched the industry's first women's healthcare product. We're now trying to customize care for Asian Americans and Hispanic populations in the geographies which we serve. And, you know, I think what's been really interesting is, kind of like, you know, George Merck said, you know, what's good for the people ends up being good for profit as well. And, you know, we've been able to grow our footprint to Arizona, Nevada, Texas, New Mexico. We've grown from, you know, serving 220,000 people in 2020 to over 300,000 people, you know, in 2024. We've grown our revenues from $3 billion to over $5 billion. So, you know, we've just, I think it's been really, really exciting and felt like an incredible, you know, place to do good work with really good people. And that's what it's been. So that's kind of why I'm here.
You know, this whole concept of what you're doing with Scan, which is so critical. I mean, you have a great Forbes piece out, you know, recently that's sort of like 10 issues. They're sort of your 10 trends. And one of them you talk about, you know, so the where healing is happening is moving. It's moving from hospitals to home. And, you know, I'm wondering if your earlier experiences with information and digital health kind of influence you, because you see that you see sort of the information and innovation trends that are happening, and that allows you to sort of anticipate a little bit. So I wanted to find out, here you're running a not-for-profit, a massive not-for-profit system. It's spreading through the West Coast of the United States and starting to move inland. It's sort of almost akin to what the early founders of CMS indirectly hope for, which is to make sure that the seniors of our nation, the most vulnerable of our nation, Medicare and Medicaid, have access to care. And you're operationalizing that side of it. I'd be curious to sort of hear from you how that early, those early years in Washington sort of gave you the foundation to sort of implement the vision that you have now.
Well, I think, you know, the time in Washington was extremely mind-opening. I think when you're a Boston-trained physician, as I was, you see Boston as the center of the healthcare and medical universe, and you view everything through the lens of, you know, what happens at a few different hospitals and through the lens of academic health, you know, which are important lenses. And, you know, certainly there are wonderful institutions in Boston. But when you go to Washington and you're in a role like, you know, the roles that I was in there, first at the Office of the National Coordinator for Health IT at HHS, and then subsequently at CMS, you know, what you start to see is like, and you know, the whole country comes to see you with their ideas and their problems. And you see that healthcare in this country is so diverse that, you know, there are rural healthcare issues. There's, you know, medical groups that have different issues, academic centers that have a different set of issues. And then you also see that the future is already here. It's just unevenly distributed. You just see that there's like these pockets of innovation where there's incredible things going on, and that we don't necessarily have, you know, an ecosystem where the best systems are winning and they're, you know, spreading their best practices. And I think that one of the exciting things that I immediately saw at Scan was like, if you've got a good thing, which this organization has had for a really long time, you've got to take it to more places. And I think it really influenced, you know, just some of what we were doing, and some of what I've been doing, you know, takes inspiration from my early time at CareMore. Some of it takes inspiration from, you know, people and ideas and things that I saw when I was in Washington. Some of it comes from my time and my, you know, my friends in Boston and some of the, you know, very rigorous academic work that I was able to, you know, to participate in and also, you know, see firsthand. So, you know, I think a lot, like people in my dad's generation, you know, join a healthcare organization and then they retire from that healthcare organization. And I think one of the gifts of my career seeing that was that, you know, it sometimes makes you a little bit insular. It sometimes makes you a little bit too focused on your institution, your institutional set of problems. And I think the gift of my career has been, you know, I've just been in these places where I've just been able to kind of continue to widen the lens, kind of like what, you know, our friend Mike Rosenblatt, you know, I see his career as a real model in some regards, is that, you know, when you do spend, you know, have different tours of duty, you are able to kind of take best practices and lessons from different places and apply those heuristics to new places. And I think that's exciting. And I think we just need more of that in healthcare. It's just more, you know, people talk about translational research. I think about translational implementation and taking things that, you know, I saw in a Merck environment and taking them to, you know, an Anthem and a CareMore environment, and then taking some of the best things I learned from there and leaving behind some of the worst things I saw in some of those places and, you know, translating those things to new environments.
Just tuning in, you've arrived just in time for Health Unabashed on Healthcare Now Radio. Today's conversation features Dr. Sachin Jain, the CEO of Scan Group and Scan Health Plan, an influential leader serving over 300,000 members and driving over $4.8 billion in revenue. Stay with us for more insights.
You know, when I see that you have a gift of building culture around you and getting people, you're like a positive virus. You arrive at a place and begin to infect people, but positively, thank goodness. I'm looking at Scan, and I'm looking at its expansion, and I'm looking at our needs. We've always known that those people who are getting older and older need more and more of our health resources, and they need more of our attention, and they need a different approach to care. Sometimes they don't need a pill or an injectable. They need a phone call or a prompt. And your experience brought you there. But I wanted to ask you, because you're creating a quality care delivery model that's not for profit. And I know that you have to sort of get providers to rally around that concept. And of course, people sort of in America sort of talk about our freewheeling capitalist system. And I was going over some 1964 papers of mine, seeing the full page ad in the New York Times of the American Medical Association decrying Medicare as the destruction of the greatness of the American health system. Now ask a doctor if he doesn't want to see Medicare patients, and he'd say, or she'd say, are you crazy? Of course I want to see Medicare patients. They're great patients and I get reimbursed for it. So you're creating culture on the foundation of all this knowledge. I would love to get your secret of how you get people to buy in to the vision that you are operationally creating.
Well, I think, many healthcare organizations operate with what I've come to call toxic positivity. And what I mean by that is they kind of are unquestioning in their own virtue. And the truth is that I kind of lead with a skepticism that is oriented towards trying to drive authenticity and closing the gap between the things that we say we do and what we actually do. And I think many healthcare organizations operate with what I call, kind of an unspoken rule around normalizing abnormal things. And I think I try to lead people by giving them the license and the freedom and almost a requirement that they actually talk about the uncomfortable things and giving them permission to change the organization, for good. At my company, we talk often about how we're, 91% of our members kind of rate our satisfaction is very high. And then, I think many organizations
are almost five out of a scale of 1 to 5. I checked.
Yeah. No, I mean, we have a JD Power, we won the JD Power Award for the highest, health plan, consumer satisfaction last year. But at the same time, I'm like obsessed with why the 9% of people actually are completely dissatisfied. I'm obsessed with the fact that even though we're growing, some large percentage of members every year, some non-zero percentage of members every year, decide to pick up and move to another health plan and go to other medical groups. And I think, you mentioned, Don Berwick, my mentor at CMS, and who was also my mentor in undergrad. And I mean, one of the kind of key industrial principles that he tried to port over from, Toyota and other, large industrial companies is really learning from your defects. And, I think somewhere along the way, healthcare stopped learning from its defects. And, in the kind of spirit of trying to just, tread water, just started engaging in this toxic positivity of like, oh, we change lives. We serve people. We're patient centered. Some companies talk about being whole person this or whole person that. And like none of those slogans actually contend with the deep contradictions that I think and moral challenges that people experience every day. If you work at one of the big large insurance companies, you're not just enabling care, you're sometimes denying care. And we tell ourselves stories about what those things mean. And I think a lot of what I try to do at when I join a company is give people permission to actually talk about like some of the challenges that they feel and think about new ways to do it. One of the things we're dealing with today is access to care. I mean, every insurance company is struggling with the fact that like we have a provider shortage in a lot of environments, and one of the medical groups that we work with has a 47-day wait time between the time that you are diagnosed with a cancer by a primary care physician or an emergency room and the time that you get to see an oncologist. Now, like, imagine that, right? Now the thing I'll tell you is that there's a version of that, Gil, that is playing out at every health insurance company in the country. I'm the only one who's on a radio show talking about it and saying that that's happening to our members today. The truth is that I come from a family and a culture and an academic upbringing where, you know, you can only solve problems when you actually talk about problems. And again, that's kind of the core of how I lead culturally. And that doesn't mean I'm not encouraging. It doesn't mean that I'm not proud of the achievements of our organization. But I also believe that there's a different management model when you're talking to leaders than when you're talking to frontline folks. And I think this is something that a lot of healthcare organizations get wrong, is that they take the culture of the frontline and they make it the culture of leadership. And it becomes absolutely like uncomfortable to talk about uncomfortable things. You know, people who speak up and speak out immediately get labeled as like either toxic or, you know, they're not fitting in or they're not aligned. And, you know, my view is like those people are our truth tellers. There's people's voices need to be elevated and escalated because there's things that we can learn from. And that's how we're going to get better. And that's how we're going to be different. And that's the journey that we're on. And I appreciate all the great things that you're saying about SCAN, but to be honest, we could be so much better. And, you know, we're involved in a very heavy debate in this country right now about Medicare fee-for-service versus, you know, Medicare Advantage. It's one of the few places where I'm actually on opposite sides with Don Berwick, who, you know, has been such an influential figure in my life. He's very anti-Medicare Advantage. I'm very pro-Medicare Advantage. And the reason, you know, but the reason that this debate is happening is because the Medicare Advantage industry has failed to be like leaps and bounds better. I think we're better, but we're not leaps and bounds better than fee-for-service Medicare. And that's what we need to be. And so that's the challenge to the people of SCAN. That's the challenge to the broader healthcare industry, is the reason we're in these zero-sum arguments about, is this better or is that, you know, better, is because we haven't actually met the challenge to be leaps and bounds better. And that's kind of what I've been feeling more and more is, you know, I'm sort of, you know, I turned 40 a couple of years ago. I'm sort of mid-careerish now. I'm no longer young and promising. I'm now kind of...
You're still young.
No, I'm kind of, you know...
I think you're 44 now or something 40, like
40, that. 43.
But 43. I don't want to age you. According to your CV, you're 80. I just want
to... Thanks. But what I'll say to you is I'm at the point in my, you know, I'm in this mid-career place where I'm saying, you know, I've spent 20 years trying to make healthcare better, and I think it's actually only getting worse. And now I'm looking ahead to the next 20 years, and I'm saying, how do we make it so that 20 years from now, when we're having this conversation on this same show, Gil, we're talking about all the great things we accomplished and all the ways in which we move the industry to be better rather than worse. I mean, we're maybe the only industry where new technology has not propelled us forward to be dramatically better than we were, you know, a generation or two ago.
You know, I look at systems that initially people are in love with them, and then over time they seem to crumble. I think of NHS in the United Kingdom, how the Brits just love NHS on one hand, and now suddenly they're starting to feel its vulnerabilities. Same with Canada. People sort of love the fact that they do have access to care. They hate the fact that they have to walk around with a hip that really needs replacement for 18 months when they're in horrible pain. And so there are some countries that actually have found a happy medium. And of course, the excuse that's used in the United States is, well, they're not scaled. We're 350 million people. They're like 20 million people. But and I don't think that's a good excuse, by the way. I think that when you create a good system, it's worthy of studying. But I have to ask in the few moments we have left, and I think we have to do another show before the 20 years, right? You have to promise me before the
20 years. For sure. Anytime you want.
Okay. But you have this unique ability to see a bit around the corner. And that's, I think, your strength. You're building for today. You're dealing with the practical problems that people are facing right now in their homes and in health institutions right now, today. You know, they're not going to wait 48 days by your standard, you're going to address them right now. But you're also an ability in your split screen. You see a bit around what's next. Can you share with us a little bit in your mind, not that it's happening or not that you're operating to it right now, could you share with us two or three things where you say, I'm thinking about this and everybody else should too?
Well, you know, a couple of things. One is I think we're entering a period of technology innovation unlike one that we've had before. You know, I think we've had tremendous advances on the biomedical sciences side. I don't think we've had the same advances in, you know, kind of the models of practice. And I think artificial intelligence, if applied correctly, then that's a big if, will really transform the delivery of healthcare. And the thing I like to say about this is really that we have to turn humans into superhumans using AI. And you know, the human part of it is really important. You know, preserving and protecting the humanity of the healthcare workforce is like right at the center of all of it. That's number one. I would say, you know, number two, I think we need a big national debate about healthcare. I think this next presidential election we have to find a way to make it about healthcare. And it's because I think, you know, we used to have a system where like everybody was kind of happy with what they have, even though if they knew the system kind of stinks overall. I think we're now getting to a place where people are not happy. I mean, the lack of first dollar coverage for most people, for most conditions, has a number of people avoiding care that they should be getting. And I think we fetishize consumer-directed healthcare and high copays as being the solution. And I think it's a classic example of how you define a problem influences how you solve a problem. And we define the problem as overutilization driven by consumers. And I've never met somebody who really wants to consume healthcare. And what I now know is that we have a lot of people who need to consume healthcare who aren't consuming healthcare. And we need to kind of elevate that on the national stage. And then I would say the third thing is, you know, we just have to continue to make sure the best and the brightest want to be in healthcare. And I think, you know, we've not done a great job of nurturing the healthcare workforce in the ways that we need to. And I think we should just be thinking about that and there should be major focus on that. And we almost need a Manhattan Project related to how do we make the best and the brightest, and, you know, continue to want to go into healthcare, because these are some of the most interesting problems we solve in society. And, you know, I think we continue to need, you know, a next generation of people who are going to always be willing to solve some of our biggest problems.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Everybody, we've been listening to probably one of the most thoughtful, experienced, courageous leaders in health today. I didn't say but one of the most certainly. Modern healthcare certainly agrees with us. Dr. Sachin Jain, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Gil. Great to be with you and Greg, and I hope all is well with you both.
And with that, we wrap today's episode. A heartfelt thank you to our global audience for tuning in, and a special acknowledgement to our guest, Dr. Sachin Jain, for his leadership at Scan Group and Scan Health Plan, significantly impacting the lives of over 300,000 members. Explore more about Scan at www.scanhealthplan.org and follow them on Twitter via @ScanHealth and Dr. Jain's account @SACJ, that's SACJAI. Health Unabashed, broadcast live 3 times a day on Healthcare Now Radio, Monday through Friday at 10:30 a.m., 6:30 p.m., and 2:30 a.m. Eastern. Connect with Gil and me on Twitter via Gil_Bash, and that's BASHE, and Greg Masters, MPH, and that is Greg with 2 G's. And do spice up your social media interactions with our hashtag #HealthUnabashed. Until next time, embrace your health journey with unapologetic passion.